Blog Talk Radio.
Quiet, please. Welcome to Rex Sykes Movie Beat, conversations with filmmakers where we discuss everything film and television. Here on Movie Beat, you'll learn what to do and what not to do when it comes to making movies and TV, and we will talk to everyone behind the scenes and in front of the camera, and I'll provide you with the guests and the information you're going to want to have, whether you're a filmmaker or a fan. And so now let's move behind the scenes here at Movie Beat. Welcome, everybody. Today, my guest is director, writer Todd Robinson. His recent movie starred Ed Harris, David Duchovny, William Fichtner, Jonathan Shake, and others, called The Phantom. And we're going to be talking with him in just a moment. But let me tell you that the chat room is open. If you're listening live, you can join us in the chat room right now. The official URL for Rex Sykes Movie Beat is rexsykes.com. My name, I'm your host. It's rexsikes.com. If you're listening live or if you're listening to this archived, because all of these shows, over 400 hours, are archived at rexsikes.com in the interviews blog, available 24/7 and available as podcast at the iTunes store. If you're listening to this live or archived, please go ahead and invite someone else to listen in. Share this with others near and far, your industry connection, your film fan friends, and invite them to listen for the first time or the 100th time. Use Twitter, Facebook, Google+, your favorite social media means, because when you do that, it supports my guest, it supports filmmaking in general, it allows other people to find us, it increases our presence on the internet, and thereby the purpose of Rex Sykes Movie Beat is to assist you in making your projects easier, faster, less expensively, and to advance your career and to get things done by connecting you up with people who are doing that, professionals in the trenches who are sharing their expertise with you in writing, directing, producing, anything behind the scenes, acting, casting. So please share this and also leave comments at the player, whether live or archived. When you leave comments or you tweet about us, you put us on Facebook or Google Plus or whatever, it makes it just that much more available to others to find us when they may not otherwise. All right, so enough of that. Join us in the chat room if you're listening live. And be sure to go back and listen to all the over 400 hours of excellent movie-making programming available for you at absolutely no charge. I want to tell you about Todd Robinson's movie, The Phantom. It was released in movie theaters. As I told you, who it's starred by, it was also produced by Julian Adams and Penn Densham. Guests have been both on the show before and are coming back. Penn will be on Thursday. But the DVD and the Blu-ray and the VOD for Phantom release is now June 25th, 3 months later. So what is that, July, August, September, it looks like. It will be available on Netflix for about 18 months, and then it will go to free TV for about 4 or 5 years, and then again Netflix. So June 25th, get your DVD, your Blu-ray, and your video on demand. I really, really enjoyed The Phantom, and that's one of the reasons why I asked Todd to be on the show. And he's had a couple prior discussions, and this will be our third, and we're going to be talking to Todd right now. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. Greetings from cloudy Southern California.
Oh, wow. Well, it's cloudy, isn't it? I also want to say that you did another really wonderful movie called Lonely Hearts that starred James Gandolfini and John Travolta, that's available on video that they can get, you know, from Amazon and elsewhere. Did you say cloud? You said cloudy California.
Cloudy Southern California.
Is this the June gloom time?
June gloom, but we love the June gloom because it keeps the high school students away from the beach just a little longer.
Wow. Well, there you go.
I can navigate Pacific Coast Highway.
For a while, at least.
For a little while, yeah.
It's at, what is it, the high school out on Temecula Canyon or something like that?
Oh, we've got, we've got Malibu High School out here.
In Malibu.
But of course, all of Southern California adjourns to the beach. And so summertime is challenging out here. But we invite everybody to come. We'd love to have you.
I don't know how anyone graduates high school living in Malibu or Santa Monica or you know, the Sunset Beach area, because it's just, you know, I was high schooled inland. You couldn't see anything. But to see the ocean and to be, you know, within feet of it, I can't imagine ever, you know.
Well, having a daughter who on Friday graduated from Brentwood High School, I can
completely
concur with what you're saying. I don't know how they graduate either.
That's amazing. Well, all right. I'm so glad that you're here. I've been looking forward to this conversation. I'm so thrilled that that Phantom is going to be available on June 25th for a release through video Blu-ray and video on demand. That's exciting news. I really enjoyed the movie, and we had in-depth conversations about Phantom and about last time about writing and we're taking. Filmmaking, independent filmmaking primarily, too, from soup to nuts or nuts to bolts, and exploring it. Before we go further, I want to say that the Phantom, by the way, the websites are phantomthefilm.com, phantom, thefilm.com, and Solar, Solar, filmworks, W-O-R-K-S. .com. And so listeners can check into both those websites. You're also at Solar Filmworks on Facebook. So be sure, if you haven't yet heard about or seen the movie in theaters, go check it out, and you'll be glad you did. So, Todd, how about we pick up with last time, as we closed the show, we said, okay, we've written a script, and certainly there's so much more that we could talk about. And for screenwriters, and writers, they can go back and listen to some of that, and we'll probably touch on more of it. But once you have the script, then what? There's financing, there's casting, there's getting into pre-production. I mean, assuming that you've, if your studio, obviously, a greenlit, or if somebody's come along and helped you finance your movie, what happens next?
Well, you know, I would start by saying there's a really terrific, important article or video that you can see that Steven Soderbergh did. I think he was making comments at the San Francisco Film Festival, and he really beautifully speaks about the state of the art, especially of cinema and independent film. And it's a slightly frustrating conversation. But he really summarized quite beautifully, in my opinion, what the challenges are. I think that financing independent film and casting tend to be interconnected. And then there's the other pink elephant in the room that nobody really ever talks about that makes things so challenging, and that is the process of marketing and advertising a movie. And so these three things together really sort of have to be not only coordinated, but one thing tends to affect the other, and it sort of works backwards, sort of the tail wagging the dog a little bit in terms of content, because if you can't promote the content in an efficient way, you know, it's very difficult to get the operating funds to pay the actors to get the movie made.
No, oh, absolutely. So how does this process work? I mean, in some cases, you attach an actor, hopefully, and then people see that and want money, or you get money and as a result you get an actor. What is kind of a snake eating the tail, or which comes first? Or
well, I think it's all about it's about getting your project validated, because everybody out there who's going to risk time and money want reassurance. And the best way to reassure somebody is by having talent attached, and by extension validates the integrity of the project. There are a lot of things to navigate in between you and the actor or the talent. There are lawyers and agents and managers who very often, especially for new filmmakers, are going to be, you know, it's their job to get their clients paid.
Right.
So generally you have to find a an asymmetrical way to get to the talent, because generally going directly through the agents and managers, and they would hate me saying this, but it's sort of true, they tend to be obstacles to smaller projects. So one must be crafty in terms of how they get in touch, contact, and forward material to actors.
So what does a filmmaker, like yourself or with a partner like Julian, where do you go? You've got a tight screenplay. You've now got to deal with agents or managers or get to the talent and or the funds.
Well, I'll tell you a little story about the making of Lonely Hearts, which is a movie I made in 2007, I think.
Uh-huh.
That you mentioned earlier. We had a great cast in the end. John Travolta, James Gandolfini, Jared Leto, Laura Dern, Selma Hayek, and others. Scott Kahn was in it. So it was a really quite a good cast. And I had a really, interesting piece of material that was based the thing that interested me about this historical piece was that my grandfather was actually involved as one of the police officers. It's a pretty hard-boiled detective story about a serial murder case in the late 1940s. And it was sort of, how do you get people to pay attention to this? And I was, it wasn't that people didn't know who I was, but I was a first-time feature director, and I had to break through that. And the first calling card, of course, is the material, which was good enough to get people's attention. But then I had to convince people. And my producer on that movie was a woman named Holly Wiersma, who's produced quite a few movies over the years. And she had a plan. And the plan was that she was going to sit me down with anybody and everybody in town who would take 15 minutes to talk to me. And we started off by going to the major agencies where she had at least some relationships. And we started with general meetings with packaging agents. And those people tend to service the talent agents, forwarding material to them. Sometimes you can almost make a business deal with a big agency if you allow them to package it for you, where they take a percentage of the raise. And it's kind of a win-win because it's more common in television, but it's a win-win for an agency because they actually make a little bit more money and they don't actually charge commission to their talent, so everybody's a little bit happier. So we went to William Morris, ICM, CAA, Paradigm, Writers and Artists, and others. And I introduced myself to these people, and I had a presentation with a lookbook and sort of my vision for the movie. I went in and talked to these folks who tended to be younger people, and then once I won their confidence, they put me in the rooms with the agents that represented the talent that I was interested in. Now, one of the people that I wanted to get to for sure was John Travolta, who, in a very circuitous way, I had a relationship with because I've been very good friends with his brother Joey for many years. We did a play together back in, I don't know, many years ago, and I had met John as a young actor, and so I had a little story that someday, if I ever met John Travolta again, I was going to share with him, And I actually got in the room with his agent, and there was, they humored me, and they smiled and patted me on the head, and they said, well, keep us posted in terms of what's happening. So what Holly did was she then decided that she wanted to position me in a way that people were going to start to notice me. And the way she did that was she sat me down at a series of hotels, the most prominent being the Chateau Marmont in Hollywood, and I would sit there because they'll let you sit there all day until it gets busy at night and have meetings. It's a very casual place, and actors love to go there. It's kind of a little bit of a scene. And so for about 3 months, I would go there two or three times a week, and I would schedule meetings with anybody who would read the script. And over time, what happened is that other people who were there for other reasons would notice, you know, so-and-so meeting with me. And they go, oh, who's that? What's going on with that? And the actors all liked the material, so they would go back to their agents and report back that they had a great meeting. And actors are fascinating people, and they always have great stories because, you know, actors tend to work, you know, from one movie to another. So, and, you know, a lot of these people, I remember sitting with Bruno Kirby, and I said,
oh, geez,
brother, yeah, just tell me a Godfather Part II story. Please tell me a story. And they're storytellers, and so they love to tell you stories. And since I'm a film nerd myself, I'm very happy to listen. And so what happens is everybody, you know, I try to make people feel great about the meeting that they just had. And so they would leave the meetings feeling, you know, like they had been supported and appreciated. And of course, I would tell them my vision for the movie. And pretty much everybody wanted to be part of the movie in the end. And this sort of created a little bit of a tsunami where over time, and this was sort of the genius of the strategy, actors started calling their agents and saying, hey, why don't I have a meeting on that movie? Why don't I have a meeting?
Oh, cool, yeah.
Right? So eventually, what it really came down to is I had to close John Travolta in order to really close the movie. I really needed that piece of premier talent. And I happen to think he's a terrific actor, so, and a big movie star. So there was no problem with me that way. He was perfect for the role. And in fact, I had always sort of thought about him. He has New Jersey roots and my family's from that area. So, and he was going to play my grandfather in the movie. So all pretty good stuff. So eventually what happened was I got a meeting with James Gandolfini, who was still a season away from ending Sopranos. And I met him over at a different hotel. Which one was one of the big Beverly Hills? I think it was the Beverly Hills Hotel. I think that's where we met. And he comes walking in, and it was pretty intimidating, man. It was freaking Tony Soprano, you know? And he kind of is that guy. And he sits down, and I was nervous. It was the only time I got nervous. And he kind of looks at me, and he kind of leans back, and he had flip-flops on. It was a little surreal. I mean, he with a Hawaiian shirt, you know. And he says, so tell me about your movie, you know. I'm like, okay. This was like a scene out of a movie. As I start to describe the movie, a woman comes in with a harp and plops the harp right down next to us because it's in the middle of the afternoon and they're having high tea. And in the middle of this, my story of blood and mayhem, this woman starts playing the harp not 6 feet away from us. And I'm starting to sweat, you know, because I don't know, it's just so weird. You know, I'm sort of pitching to this gangster icon and this woman's playing, I don't know, it's just a very weird thing. And finally, Gandolfini, he looks at me, and he's, this little smile starts to come over his face, and he says, would you like to retire to the bar? And I'm like, yeah, right away. And so we went in there, and they poured us a couple of beers, and it got easier from there. But he sweated me for a while. So anyway, that was kind of a cool moment, cool career moment. But as we talked, he said to me, he goes, you know, I never say this. He says, I turn everything down because I never feel like I can do a better. I always recommend another actor who I think can do a better job. But he said, you know what, I really feel like I could do this well.
Wow.
And so I said, well, that's great. That's amazing. You know, obviously amazing. I was ecstatic. And then John, who they had actually done a few movies together, Get Shorty and some other things at that point, and they love each other. But this was the first time that they were really going to have, you know, pretty much every scene together because they're partners in the movie, they're cops and they're partners in the movie. So John agrees in principle to do the movie, but James becomes a condition of John's contract. So
oh, wow.
I flew out to, so I finally get a chance to meet John based on that. And so Jimmy agreed to do the film. And then I go and meet John at his home up in Maine. And that was another interesting evening, because John's a little bit of a vampire. He kind of sleeps during the day, works out at night and stuff. So I met him at another hotel at like midnight, and had this conversation. And anyway, John agreed to do the movie, and this is sort of the moral of the story, I guess, or one of these moments where, you know, you want to be protected and supported by, you know, your producing team and so forth. And it was, it had taken time. I haven't told the story for a long time, but it had taken quite a few months to get all these things to line up. And I still didn't have a leading lady for the movie, or the two villains. I didn't have Leto or Selma Hayek, and was really struggling with that casting. And so it had gotten pushed along the line, and we had a hard start date because Gandolfini had to go back to The Sopranos. So I had a hard out with him, so I had to be finished with him by a certain date. And so it was literally, I think, like the Saturday after everybody, the Friday after everybody left for the holidays. It was December of 2006, I think. And I'm sitting in my office, and my phone rings, and it's Jim, and he's like, "Listen, I can't do the movie." And I'm like, "What?" You know? And he goes, "Look, man, I just, you know, the show's coming up, you know, I can't do it. I'm sorry, but I can't do the movie." And I'm just like, my entire, you know, 4 years of work, like, was literally crumbling before me. And there was nobody to call. Cassian Elwes was out of town. Holly Wilson was out of town. Everybody was gone. Marty Bowen, who was representing Jimmy at the time, who's now quite a big producer in his own right, was on a ski vacation. I mean, everybody was gone, and I'm alone. And this thing just completely exploded. And, of course, I don't have signed contracts with anybody. So Jim is now, you know, he's conditioned to John's contract, so I can't even replace him. So I hang up the phone, and it's one of those moments where I just had to kind of, like, man up, cowboy up, as we say. And I picked up the phone, and I hit the redial, and Jim answered the phone, and I just said, "Brother, you can't not do the movie. I'm not taking no for an answer." And I said, "And this is why." And I really didn't want to tell him that. I didn't want to put that kind of power in his hands, that the whole thing was going to, you know, crumble without him, because I didn't know him. I didn't know if I would be, you know, abused by that later. And he listened to me and didn't say a word, which was worse than sitting next to him with the harp, you know.
Right.
And over time, he finally said, just like this long pause, and just goes, "Okay, I'll do the movie. Merry Christmas." Click, and he hangs up the phone.
Wow!
But it was one of these moments where I was completely and totally alone, and realized that there was nobody to help me but me. There just really was nobody to help me, and so yeah, I had to do it for myself, and I really had to confront somebody who's a very sort of powerful guy, has the perception of that. But in the end, what it turns out is that he's the sweetest marshmallow you've ever met in your life. He's just shy, and because of what you project on him from some of the roles that he's played, you know, you're making up this big story in your head that has nothing to do with who the guy really is. So, anyway, that's a very long, you know, story, but it explains how complicated and nuanced these things are. And so it getting a piece of casting for your film is not just, you know, it's not just going out and attaching somebody. It really doesn't work that way. You have to really work to get to people, and that, to get to John, to get the two of those men to agree to do that movie at that time, from the moment that I really started in earnest, took 6 months.
Wow.
The movie was falling apart the entire time. You know, I mean, and that's what happens. Movies are falling apart. Jessie Nelson, a wonderful director friend of mine, years ago after she graduated from AFI and had, I think, directed her first feature film, said to me, "Well, if you like train wrecks, if you like going to train collisions and pulling the bodies out and trying to get the train back on the tracks every morning, first thing after breakfast, you're going to love making movies." And I've never forgotten that, because it really is a little bit like that. There's always there's always a crisis happening, and the thing that comes with experience is that you realize how, you learn how to manage them and realize that it's just that volume goes up, and people seem sort of scattered, and the crazier it gets, the calmer you need to become and figure out how to tell the story under those circumstances. And that's, in some ways, what defines a film and certainly is what defines filmmaking.
Well, it's a fascinating journey. I really appreciate you sharing that. Fraught with so many potential pitfalls, it can seem daunting, to people if they don't decide, I have to do this and are driven to get it done. I mean, when you said you were alone, I can imagine how that feels and or know what that feels, but it is truly, you got to be on your feet all the time. What you said about putting out fires and crisis management, So that's my statement, and my question then, too, in all this process of meeting with John and meeting with James and having things look promising and falling apart, what about the financing and the people who, the people who are producing for you? Was there, money at this point, are you hoping to raise money? Do you end up, ultimately agents and lawyers and their entourage and everybody's going to get involved, and then, they're going to parcel out what everybody's owed and how it's owed and scheduling your days and things like that. But during this initial process, were you financed, or did you have to get financing based on, or did it help to have to get financing based on the people you were able to secure?
Well, a lot has changed, in the, whatever it is, 5 or 6 years since then, maybe mm-hmm. 7 or 8, I guess now. A lot has changed. At that time, this hasn't changed. There, and it was certainly true on Phantom and other things that I've worked on that I didn't direct, where there is always an imminent threat. See, in life, if you want to go buy a house, you put down a down payment, a deposit of 20% or whatever it is. You go to the bank, they vet you. And they either, give you a loan or they don't. But you don't move into the house or start to pack up your old house and move out before that is done, is finished. So in the real world, there is a series of events that takes place that are transactional between here and you getting what you ultimately want. And in the movie business, especially in the independent world, it's never like that. It is a series of things that are falling apart all the time, and you have to learn how to manage the stress of that, because it just is the way it is. You will often have multiple sources of money. For instance, in today's world, you've heard people talk over and over about soft money or tax incentives. In the briefest term or the simplest terms, the way an independent film might come together today is that you will have a combination of hard equity, which might represent, they want it to represent the lowest possible amount of the overall operating budget. So if you have a $10 million budget, they're probably looking to put maybe $3.5 million, say, in hard equity. Then they're looking for you to make the film in a place where there's a tax incentive, for instance, we're trying to put a project together in Georgia that has a gross 30%, I think, tax incentive, which will net down to about 22. Uh-huh. But that is, so if they agree to do that, they'll give you a piece of paper that's bankable, but you have to take that piece of paper to a bank, and the bank it's got to be subsidized, or not subsidized, but financed, and so. So that's a process. So that's really a short-term bank loan against that paper that will be vetted by the state, and then they'll decide, how much money you actually spent in their state, and they'll award you accordingly. And so that's money that might not be returned to the investors for a year. Then you've got probably, in addition to that, you might be financing some foreign sales. which is more paper, more banking, and then there might be a gap loan on top of that. And so, and in the meantime, in the middle of that, the actor you put in the movie, you know, go makes a movie that tanks. And so their foreign sales temporarily plummets. You know, all the way that these things are used to vet your package are sort of insane, because it just as easily be, in between their last movie that didn't do so well and you making your movie, another movie comes out that's great. And so their foreign sales goes up, but you undersold them. So, you know, by definition, you could have gotten more on that sale, but you were, you know, this is how we have to scrape the money together. So when you hear that gobbledygook, you can kind of understand how it's falling apart all the time, because those things all have to come together and be coordinated. And the backstop to all of this is the bond company, the completion bond company, which is the group that everybody insists comes in to guarantee the completion of the movie. And there are only a few left that really do it. So they have to vet you. They have to vet your schedule, your plan, your budget. And you're sort of saying what you have to say to get your movie made. I mean, the Bond company did not believe we could do Phantom in 20 days. They did not believe us. They did not believe that we could do it for the money that we did it for. But we had a plan, but they had just never seen anything like it. So they were, you know, terrified, because if I fall on my face and don't do what I say I'm going to do, they have to step in and finish the movie, and they never want to do that, because they're not filmmakers. They're financial guarantors, you know. So, you know, that is a total, you know, poop storm of stuff going on while you're really trying to make a movie. And, you know, the scheduling and the planning of the actual execution of the movie, well, that's what we do. That's the fun part. But you're distracted by the pressures of all these other things, not to mention that every single person that comes to work for you has to go through a process with them in terms of hiring. And I'll skip past the below-the-line people and go back to the talent, where you're constantly juggling who gets what and how do you create a sense of parity so that so-and-so doesn't feel put out because, you know, so-and-so's got a bigger trailer. And you hear these things, they're cliches, but they're cliches because they're true. And so as the director, you know, it's not just about you showing up and, you know, having your artistic moment. It's about you, you know, navigating all these issues that come up constantly, day in, day out. And so, you know, how do you get somebody out of a trailer who's got their nose out of joint? How do you create the conditions for doing great work and keep everybody calm? And I can tell you, I'm guilty of not being great at that the first time out. You know, I mean, it was a very, very stressful situation. And because I had six really powerful actors in that movie, you know, all vying for their spot, you know, all wanting to know that I was completely focused on them. And I think I've gotten a little bit better at it. But anyway, that's why it's toppling down around you all the time.
And I mean, it's amazing, because I mean, if you're producing and directing, it's just completely overwhelming. Hopefully, you have, you know, some insulation if other people are taking, you know, the primary role and doing all of that. But it never ever. I mean, I don't think, to my knowledge, no one is ever isolated from or insulated from most of what you discussed. So,
well, especially in pre-production. You're not, because you have to get involved. I had an actor who shall not be mentioned on a movie that shall not be mentioned, who at the last minute made ridiculous demands that my movie could not possibly sustain. And so, and this is somebody who, you know, we had raised money on and so forth, and somebody I considered, you know, a friend. And all of a sudden, at the 11th hour, it got really crazy, and my producers John Watson and Pendentium and Julian Adams did everything that they could do, but in the end, I had to call up. I had to make the direct call and be confrontational about it. And in the end, I had to let that person go. So,
right.
And it was somebody I really wanted to work with, whose work I really love. But sometimes that's what you have to do. And I'm not, you know, really that confrontational in my normal life, in my real life. But that's what I mean. There comes a point where you have to go nose to nose with an agent, and you just have to say, listen. You know, are you really going to do this to this movie that's, you know, 6 days away from rolling cameras? Is this really who you are? And you have to get in their grill, you know, and it's not comfortable. But, you know, you just do it, and you realize that it really isn't personal. It's sort of apersonal. It's just business. But you kind of have to, you know, get in there and do what you have to do to protect your project. And that's the stuff that, you know, at least I didn't ever really think about. I thought it was much more of an artistic pursuit, you know, or, you know, executing these ideas with these people more, you know, I come out of the theater. So there was much more a sense of, esprit de corps in that way. You know, we were all headed towards opening night and the curtain coming up. And a movie isn't really like that because everybody doesn't show up on opening night. People are spread out over the course of a production schedule, and they come in and they go out. So, you know, even just getting everybody together for a rehearsal or a table read, it can be really challenging. But I got off the track a little bit. I was coming back to I just wanted to say that the group of people that I worked with on the last film, at least, once we were in production, they did everything they could to take care of problems, to keep me focused on what I needed to be focused on. And sometimes, you know, I kind of feel a little guilty about that because you feel like you're being handled at that point. But in the end, it really isn't. It's in everybody's interest that you're not distracted by things that you don't need to be distracted by. And that's the dirty job of being a producer, because they basically have to sit there with the, you know, with the shit hat on, you know, dealing
right.
with all of that stuff. And but it's important because in the end, it's really about your relationship with those actors and, you know, as I said before, you know, creating an environment where they can do their best work. So,
I mean, you know, I really appreciate everything you just said. And I also really appreciate the parallel you drew, you know, between, you know, coming from theater and the notion of, hey, you know, we got a barn, let's do a show kind of thing, and that there's an opening night and everybody's working toward that versus the people are scheduled at different times and come and go throughout, and everybody has their own agendas, and or their agents and managers also have their own agendas for the people in the project. And, you know, it is this delicate juggling and balancing act and you know, taking care of personalities and managing and putting out any, you know, any fires that come up, that I don't know that, you know, most people can fully ever appreciate what that's like until they're in that position. And I draw a parallel between professional independent filmmaking and today, the notion that anybody can pick up a camera and go make a movie. The stakes
not
are different.
Really,
I mean,
really.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. I mean, you know, people
yeah.
are, you know, I can go get something out of a store and gather my friends and shoot something, but that's not, you know, an independent movie in the way that we talk about independent professional movies or show business. That is a movie that is made outside the Hollywood system, but it's also outside the traditional business model of making, any business model of making movies.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's true. And I also would just say that there is a brotherhood and a sisterhood of filmmaking
mm-hmm.
that you can't get into that club until you've done it. But it is also the reason that I pull for every film that I see.
Right.
I really do. And when they're not so good, I just, you know, I refuse to, you know, be a fanboy blogger and say crappy things about other people's movies
right.
because there is just no way to really ever understand the conditions in which the films were made and the pressure that the filmmakers were under. You know, and this is the thing about being a filmmaker. You know, we talked about isolation and, you know, feeling alone before. It really is an interesting thing, you know, because I'm a writer-director I start relatively alone in the beginning, and I'm isolated. I mean, I've just come out of the bunker yesterday. I just completed a first draft on a new script, and after, you know, being 8 weeks alone, then, you know, you move into this thing, and it gets very, very busy, and then you kind of get alone again with an editor in a room, and then everybody comes in and judges it, and it by definition, it sort of gets torn apart. And this thing that you've been so myopic about and focused on suddenly is up for grabs, and it, you know, you put it out there and it gets judged by test audiences and all sorts of things, and you finally, you know, you're trying to protect your vision, but you have to respect what the audience tells you is working or not working, and you finally finish your film, and then you put it out there, and let me tell you, you're all alone again. you are a one man standing between you and the film, and what the writers write and the reviewers say, and, you know, and so you really have to have a thick skin and understand that, you know, making films looks different at different times to people on the outside looking in, and it's really a challenging thing to go through. And you just have to love it because it's painful.
Wow. Well, very well put. And you know what? Let me take a short break now, and then we can talk uninterrupted for the balance of the show. And we're about that midpoint. So let me remind the listeners that if you're listening, I'm talking with Todd Robinson, director, writer. We've talked about two movies so far, Lonely Hearts and Phantom. And Phantom was recently released in movie theaters, starring Ed Harris and David Duchovny, William Fichtner, Jonathan Shake, among others. And it is now coming out on DVD, Blu-ray, and a video on demand. And that date, the release date, is June 25th. DVD, Blu-ray, video on demand, starting June 25th. 2013. And then about 3 months later, it'll be on Netflix for about a year and a half. And then after that, it goes to free TV for 4 or 5 years. And then again on Netflix. So this is an opportunity to find out what we're talking about. You can also get Lonely Hearts. Look into that, you know, by a web search where you can purchase that. But it's very fascinating, a wonderful movie. And Todd and I talked in an earlier show about it, because it is about a submarine and what happens to the people aboard the sub. And I had spent an evening on a sub with my son, and so I knowing the conditions that these sub people go through, and then imagining Todd and his crew and cast on a submarine, actually shooting a movie on a submarine, was just almost more than I could imagine. So you want to see this movie, so go see it. The websites are phantomthefilm.com, phantomthefilm.com, and solarfilmworks.com, solarfilmworks.com. Now, I got to tell you that tomorrow I was going to have Julian Adams, who's one of the producers on Phantom, on the show, and we're all scheduled, all set, all ready to go, and I've had an emergency that I have to take care of. I've got a fire I've got to put out, and so I've had to postpone the show with Julian tomorrow because of something that's come up for me that I need to handle, and I've got to go out of town to do that. So there will be no show tomorrow with Julian Adams, but he will be coming back, and he will be on the show. On the 6th of June is Pandentium, another of the producers of Phantom, and also a writer and a producer and a director of many other things. He's been on the show before too, and he will be back. Friday the 7th, Amy Jo Berman, casting director for HBO for many years. She will be on our show on the 7th. Doug Richardson, screenwriter of Money Train, Bad Boys, Die Hard 2, will be coming up on the 11th. Tom Malloy is an independent filmmaker. He's financed, I believe, 3 or 4 or 5 of his own feature films, raising about $25 million. And he's going to talk about how he did that and other things. Alex Cruz, on the 13th, is an actor, a martial artist, and a tactical consultant. And we're going to be discussing those with him. And Peter Marshall is a director and a first AD. We've been doing the director series. We will continue that on the 14th. Then I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the month of June, July, starting on the 18th. So happy to see people and meet people, and I'm there for business. So I'm excited, but we'll be on hiatus most likely for the show. So listen to all of the recording. Go back and find the archives at rexsikes.com, at the interviews blog, or from iTunes or from Blog Talk Radio. And go and listen to all of the fine guests and fine discussions that we've had through the years about movie making. And even in the last 4 years, if you go back and listen to the beginning ones, you'll find out how movie making has changed in a relatively short period of time as well. Over 400 hours of programming, so go do that. Also, please share all of these interviews with your friends, your industry connections, and both near and far through your favorite social media means, Twitter, by calling them up or saying hi. I went to a film funding thing the other day, and people would say, oh, you're Rex Sikes. Somebody just told me about your program. I want to tune in. Or it's so great to meet you. I've been listening for years. So please do share it, because what it does is it promotes my guests, and it makes their expertise available to others who may not yet have the opportunity to benefit from it. But through your efforts of sharing the show and leaving comments at the player or at rating and reviewing the shows, they can benefit too. And that's what we truly appreciate and thank you for. And thanks for all the tweeting and Facebooking and everything that you already do and all the fans of the show. All right, we're back with Mr. Todd Robinson, and we're discussing Phantom. But along with that, we're talking about, you know, the nuts and bolts and soup to nuts of filmmaking, of professional movie making and independent, the hardships, the ups and downs of what one goes through to get a movie made in the theaters or distributed and then marketed. So I'm enjoying this very much. Todd, you know, we've talked a lot about this, but then and you've got the actors, and you mentioned the agent and something happening at the last moment. But there are, can you talk more, I guess, about the relationship and the challenges and opportunities working with the artist representatives and then lawyers and the entourage? Because you know, once you've got a name actor on the set, you may also have not just that actor on the set, but a number of people that accompany the actor.
Well, I think it's important to first understand what everybody's job is and realize that just because you might be at odds with somebody's representative in terms of what you want, you have to understand that it's their job to service their client, and they're just doing their job. And
right.
And you have to understand that in order to sometimes resolve what the issue might be. So, you know, that's taken, you know, years of being, you know, represented myself, and my wife is a manager, and so, you know, I've seen it sort of from both sides. So, you know, you understand these people, and you really want to make them your allies anyway, because it's important for them in terms of supporting you, for you to give them what they need to go back to their actor or talent and be able to deliver what they want. And sometimes you don't know if it's the actor asking for something that might feel, you know, a little unreasonable or it's going to put you in a position, or whether it's them just trying to do the best they can and push and try to figure out where the boundaries are. And so sometimes you just have to push back. And this is why I think I started out this whole ramble by saying, you know, being sort of asymmetric about how you get to the talent is really important, because if you can establish, or it can be an advantage, I should say, because if you can establish a creative dialogue and a partnership in terms of, you know, achieving a common goal or a common vision for a piece of material with an artist or an actor, then they're pretty much going to commit to you rather than commit to the deal. So, of course, the talent handlers don't like this when you sort of go around them. But if you can, if you have those relationships with those kind of people, you can go and have them supporting you and going back to their folks and saying, hey, listen, make this happen, close this, I want to do this. And when you're dealing with folks that you don't even know, going through the front door can be basically impossible, you know, because the thing about independent film is, and everybody understands this, that you're trying to attach talent so that you can essentially leverage them to get other talent and to, you know, give you the tools that you need to go out and raise money. And, you know, what do they get for that? You know, they don't get anything. So you can, it's very easy to understand why their folks want to protect them. And I respect that. I totally respect that. So, I guess what I was getting back to, just to sum up, is that you need to understand what everybody's job is and everybody's position is, so that as long as you respect their position, you can eventually sort things out. And, you know, in the end, you go, look, this is the money I have. This is what I got. This is the terms of what the deal has to be. And if you can't make those terms, I'm going to alienate this other guy that your actor wants to work with. So do we really want to create a scenario before we even roll a camera where there's going to be potential resentment? You know, help me out here. And there you go. You know, now on a studio movie where everybody's really getting paid their rate and everything, I think it's, you know, a little bit easier to sort those things out. But at least in terms of money, if it's just about money. But on an independent movie, you've got what you've got.
Well, I think one of the important things that you said among the many was, you know, the person, you want the person to commit to you. And so but the only way to do that is it's with the relationship that you develop. And I always think of, you know, Hollywood as a relationship business, because obviously I don't mean the better connected you are, but the better your connections are, meaning the stronger your, like, familial ties are, the better friends you are. There's always a difference between friends and business, but if someone's committed to you as a friend, they can go the extra mile to helping you accomplish something than if, you know, they have no investment in you.
As long as you don't – look, it's still a professional
situation.
It's still
business,
and I don't know an actor alive – in my world, who's a, you know, a big, substantial person, who is going to put their risk their business on behalf of a friendship, you
right?
Know, and you have to respect that. I mean, you can't go to somebody and say, you know, I want to make this movie about my dog, and you promised, you know,
of course.
I mean, you know, that's never going to happen. And the other
right.
thing is, it is equally important to create the same sort of relationships. In terms of respect and delivering for those agents, because
yes.
you have to go back to them over and over again, you know, for other actors, for this actor again, for whatever it is, and so you want to create an experience for the actors that they can go back and say, you know, that was really a great experience for me. I would work with that guy again, irregardless of the things that can't be controlled, which is the outcome of the movie, on which there are too many things to bear that are out of your control as a filmmaker. But what I really try to do is make the experience great. And I've been successful at that, and sometimes I haven't been. And regardless of the performances I got or whatever, when the experience of making it has been stressful, I felt like I failed because I let what was, you know, the pressure on me get past me and into the environment, and the actors can't be concerned with that. They just can't. It's not their job to worry about. You know, if you make a deal with an actor that they're going to be out at 10 o'clock, then you have to respect it. You know, or if you go over, if you have to go into overtime or something, you can do it once or twice, but and ask for a favor. But you can't do it every day. You know,
absolutely.
You can't let them see you sweat, because then they start to sweat. I mean, it's human nature. And when people start to get insecure, you know, to a degree where they think that there's nobody driving the ship, people panic, and then everything blows up. You know, I haven't had that happen to me exactly, but I've seen it happen. And that's why you you need to build a great team around you and suck it up, because you know, if you want to get great work out of them, you can't. You're protecting your actors the way your producers are protecting you. It's really the you know, just an extension of the same thing.
Very cool. I think it's, you know, important again to just reinforce
when I say relationship and you say relationship, I think the idea is that we respect the business process, and what you're talking about is respecting your friends and making sure that you're not, you know, in any sense abusing them or the relationship or the people around them that truly trust and respect and your word and keeping your word and being, you know, known as, you know, an honest and I imagine loyal business person. You know, it's where reputation can precede you and I think can be a benefit. And as long as you're able to do what you say and make things happen, and as you point out, you know, if you can make the experience wonderful for them, then they may wish to repeat it. One of the important things that I learned in theater and live events was that very thing. You know, if somebody came in and they wanted to learn something, you know, you could sit them down like they do in grade school, you know, in the old days, and you could beat it into them, and I mean figuratively, but you could make it a really horrible learning experience, or you could make it something that they went, wow, this is so cool, I want to learn more, and or I like that place, I want to come back. And to the extent that you can do that with the relationships that or the people that you know and work with and have them come back because they liked it and because they like you, I think is an important ability and talent and human skill to have. And it translates from your life to your profession and probably not the other way around as much.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, making the film from the point of view of maybe the only person. I mean, the crew is there from the beginning to the end. You know, the filmmakers are there from the beginning to the end, but the actors aren't necessarily there from the beginning to the end. And so it's unlike a play. It can be a very fragmented experience. And sometimes it's difficult for the actors to separate the experience of making the film from the performance that they actually deliver. I think somebody was telling me, or I read, that Jennifer Lawrence was really confused about her. A friend of mine saw her speak at the Santa Barbara Film Festival in a Q&A. She was talking about how she was very confused about her performance in Silver Lining Playbook and really didn't think she had delivered. And, of course, she goes on to win the Academy Award, and she's just amazing. And as Sidney Poitier said to me one time, you know, he said, actors are always working right at the edge of their anxiety, right at the edge of their self-loathing and their self-doubt and all of those things. And it's important. That's where vulnerability is. That's where the surprises are. If you're willing to work at that edge, and I feel like it's my job as a director to lead them up to that edge and kind of keep them there, and then not letting them fall off the other side. They got to sort of walk that razor blade, and not stumble, because there's really amazing things that can happen if that's where you are. And so again, that when I talk about creating the conditions for great work, that's what it is. And that's different than, you know, having an immovable opinion about how something has to be. It's really, at least in my terms, it's a process of discovery. I always go in fully prepared to do something, but I know where all the camera options are, because I've pre-planned all that stuff. But when I go in and we start to work with the material and find the blocking, and all of a sudden moving over here means something, but I didn't have the camera in a position to find that moment. Well, that's where you've got to be flexible, because you're discovering things as you go. And, you know, and so you really don't want to be so rigid that those things can't happen. So, again, you have to create enough trust in the actor that it's basically a laboratory for them, and so that they can find these moments that are not possible to plan, that there is real human energy passing between two people. I mean, I don't want to get too like zen about it, but there really is something that happens when you stop playing the text and start playing, you know, emotion that's happening in the moment that isn't pre-planned or pre-designed. And so it all sort of comes back to this idea of not bringing the stress of practical problems into that moment, because in the end, the only thing that matters is what happens in the frame. That's all that matters. The rest of it is just cheap drama, you know. So I don't know. It's that's part of the fun of it, I guess, and the challenge at the same time.
Well, let's kind of talk about that, because what you just said. I mean, we're talking about working with people and actors and managers and all the people part of it, but also actors show up with people on the set, and they have sometimes a lot of different people there, whether they're friends or professional people, and then directing the actor on the set. There's the 'cause keeping that line, or making it so that you get the performances that you want in the frame, so it shows up on the screen, and then also having to navigate what you said earlier. What do you do if an actor shuts themselves into their trailer and won't come out? You know, it's once you're in production, you're kind of, you're in the trench. Everything's going on, and it's not just what occurs on the set, but it's how you manage what occurs when they, I suppose, in some ways go to lunch or lock themselves in a trailer.
Well, that is slightly euphemistic, I think. I've never had anybody, lock themselves in a trailer.
I know what you mean. That's just the example, yeah.
No. I just want to clarify that, at least everybody I've worked with, you try to figure this out before you enter into the fray or before you hire them, has been nothing but professional. However, there are different challenges that you don't anticipate. For instance, contractual obligations that a certain movie star might have, where they have, for instance, what they call a portal-to-portal contract, which means that their day begins when they step into their car, and it ends when they step back into their house. So that will generally knock 2 hours out of your shooting day.
Right.
And I've worked with people who've had this, not really understanding what it meant. So, for instance, if you have somebody scheduled for what's essentially a normal 12-hour day, and you lose 2 hours there, then you're going to lose an hour for rehearsal, probably an hour for hair and makeup, another hour for lunch. Suddenly, you're looking at a 12-hour day being reduced to maybe a 7 or 6 hour day. So now you've got a scene where you had I had 26 setups for this scene. Well, guess what? Yeah, the first AD is going to come up to me, and the producer is going to come up to you, and they're going to go, to keep you on track, you got 45 minutes to get this. How are you going to do it? So that's where you. So now here I am. I got to do this. How do I get the shot? I'll give you an example. In Lonely Hearts, There's a very confrontational scene between John Travolta and James Gandolfini, and it was not that complicated. It was in a house, but it was really going to demand at least standard coverage, which was going to mean at least 3 or 4 setups, at least some sort of a master and overs, and I wanted to move the camera. And there was no way that I was going to be able to get it and stay on my day. I was out of time. So what I did was I stopped everything, and it was a total nose-to-nose in profile shot. I backlit them a little bit, and I rehearsed it about 10 times, and it was a kind of a long scene. And it was something that built up and built up and built up. But normally, when you're shooting coverage, people can drop lines, and you can pick it up, and you'll sort it out in editorial. In this case, what I did was I just lined the camera up on the dolly, and it was just a slow push in, and while these guys went through the scene. Now, they can't drop a line now, because I have nothing to cut away to, and I also can't control the pace of the scene. But what it did was, because I took the time, and I was, the producers were sort of flipping, because I wasn't shooting, I was rehearsing. But when we found the rhythm of the scene and they really had the lines in the text, it's a beautiful scene. And it's just a slow push, and it's a two shot, and it's great, and it saved me 2 hours. But everybody knew, including me, that may or may not suit the rhythm of the movie at that point. because I no longer had a way to adjust the pace. But sometimes you have to come up with a plan, come up with an idea and go, you know, and in the end, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie because it's just so pure and clean. And it's two actors really acting. It's not me, you know, doing my thing in the editing room and making, you know, carving a performance out of something. It's these two guys going at it, and it's really fun to watch.
Oh, that's very cool. And as a director, what would you? I mean, that's a beautiful story. But what would you do if it doesn't fit the pace of the film? I mean, it just becomes something that somehow is now you stick in or you take out. I mean, that's a completely new topic, and maybe down the road, you know, about editing everything. But you are going to be faced with situations like that, I bet, more than once, aren't you? I mean.
Well, my advice to a student filmmaker would be don't do that, and always have a cutaway. You know, I mean, you really do need to have a bailout. That was just one of those situations where I the movie was chasing me the whole time. It was like it was like running from an avalanche. I never was caught up on that movie. Just never caught up. And there were a variety of reasons for that, some being, me, but mostly being things that I couldn't quite control. One being that, that was a movie that I had two couples that the movie was really about. It was about Jim and John, and it was about Selma and Jared. And they were shot basically separately. You know, John and Jim were done. It was like, I think, 3 or 4 days of crossover where I had all four of them. And then John and Jim went away, and I shot out the rest of the film with Jared and Selma. And so, but I had this heart out with Jim, so, like, that was coming. That was coming. So I couldn't push him. I had to get him shot out. So, you know, there were things, you know, there were situations where I couldn't push to the next day. You know, if you have a 65-day or a 90-day shoot, you have flex in there. You can push and flex, and you have options. But when you're doing a movie in 30 days or 35 days, it becomes, there's far more pressure on your schedule because, what are you gonna do? If somebody's got to go, they got to go. If you're going to lose a location, you're going to lose a location. So you have to figure out a way to tell the story. And that may or may not have anything to do with your original plan, and that's independent filmmaking, and I think it's just terrific training and experience to figure that out, because if that's the way you come up on a big movie, I can't imagine. The pressures are different. You're bleeding more money at once. You know, the crews are bigger. You know, but. But it's on a small movie, you've got to figure out how to tell your story, and a lot of the times you have to do it on the fly.
Again, it's amazing because it's art, versus or not necessarily versus, but also in addition to business, it's how do you get the artistic components together with all of these business opportunities, business constraints, and you're talking budget and the schedule and being behind and money, flowing out and having to put out all these fires and think on your feet and readjust and get the story done. And what you said a moment ago was like, being chased by an avalanche. How do you manage that? Are there tips or suggestions but how do you manage one, your ability to withstand it or stand it, the stamina? And how do you keep the production together without going nuts? I mean, it's there's a huge amount of responsibility on one's shoulders.
Oh, no question. But I mean that's the deal. That's the deal. It's a big boy big girl game, and if you don't like pressure, then this probably isn't the thing for you. You said something a minute ago that I was trying to get back to. I guess it's this. I know what I was going to say. To use a sports analogy, it's really it's it look, you're in the middle of the Super Bowl, and you got a set of plays. And, you know, it's going to be a down and in, right, for the wide receiver, and that's the plan. And he goes down there, and there's a, you know, the safety cuts him off and turns him back out. Well, now the quarterback and he have to think on their feet. What are they going to do? There's 30 seconds left in the game or whatever it is. You know, you improvise. You have to make it happen. And that's what separates, you know, the good ones from the great ones, maybe. And so that's really what it's about. And the more experience that you have, the more that you do it, you realize that it's all going to be okay. It really is going to be okay. And filmmaking in the end is not, it's not like, you know, brain surgery or something where, you know, you get in there and it's life or death. You're always going to have some options. But it's also, you know, when I got married, I remember our pastor took my wife and I aside and sat us down and said, "Now listen, things are going to go wrong at the wedding. Everybody wants the perfect wedding, but things are going to go wrong. Somebody's going to be late. Somebody's going to forget something. A baby's going to cry. You're going to drop the ring. Like, things are going to happen." But he said, "But those are the things that are going to be most precious to you in the end, and they're going to define the experience. And so bringing good cheer and humor with you will make all the difference." And I think that applies here as well. Things are going crazy all the time, but we're just making movies in the end. It's a joy and a privilege to be doing it. It's a ball. It's fun. And it's not going to cost anybody their life, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know. And so you have to remember that too, and not take your other people have of course said it before me, but it is true. Take the work seriously, but don't take yourself seriously. And try to be loose in it, because if you get all wrapped up, you know, you're not going to be able to run that pattern. You're not going to be able to think on your feet if you're all wrapped up and exhausted. And you use the word stamina. I think that's probably the most significant thing you can do for yourself is to come well rested, well prepared, get a good night's sleep. Come with your plan. I like to go to bed early, get up early, and have an hour or two to myself before people start asking me questions, and really go over the sides for that day and review in my head, you know, what I was thinking. Because again, you know, when I'm planning it out with my team, especially my DP and my first AD, and you generally go through the script in order. And then, of course, the thing gets scheduled and nothing's in order. And so part of the challenge is for me to know, or whoever the director is to know, all the time where they are in the story so that you can create a sense of consistency. And Phantom was a great example of, I think we talked about this before, but we block shot a lot of that, which is to say we were in a given room or a given location on the sub that was lit, and for 3 days maybe, we went through every scene in order, or maybe not in order. Sometimes it was based on what wardrobe people were in, so we didn't have to change wardrobe. And I would have to reboot everybody and say, okay, now it's day 7 of the story. Here's where we are. Here's what's happened. And what I'm telling them has happened hasn't been shot yet. So, you know, how do you get actors in a place to give you the right degree of result, emotion, whatever it might be, when they haven't played the scene before, you know? So it's all of that kind of stuff. Now, when you see a movie, or see this movie in particular, I can't tell anymore, because it just all comes together in the end somehow. It's the magic of the whole thing. But on the day, it's one of those things that you really have to be prepared for, because you'll get those questions from everybody. Okay, where are we again? What did I say in the last scene? What did I do? What happened? And when you're dealing with maybe in the case of Phantom, you know, I would have like maybe 6 or 7 characters that I had to be tracking at the same time on a given day. And you just can't do that if you don't have stamina. It's mentally really exhausting. So, you know, not to mention that you're sort of dealing with everybody's problems. The prop persons, the wardrobe persons, the cameraman, the gaff, you know. Everybody's got a question for you. So how do you keep it all straight?
Awesome.
Awesome. We've got about 10 minutes left on the outside here, and I want to continue the discussion about directing actors and how you work with them to get performances and get that magic up on the screen. Continue that.
Is that a question?
I would like to continue some of your methods or thoughts about how you work with actors.
Well, the first thing is to hire really good ones. Hire people who really know their craft, because by the time you get to set, you don't have time to teach people how to act. Although I do view directing movies a little bit like being a coach or being a teacher. Phil Jackson used to say of the Lakers that, game time, he would be criticized because he was so laid back. But he said, I do all my teaching in practice. And I come up with a game strategy, and I explain that to the team, and then it's their game to win or lose. And that's I think you could extend that a little bit to mounting and directing a movie and directing actors in a movie. You first have an intellectual conversation about, I tell them what I think the script is about. Well, usually what I do is I ask them what they think the script is about first, because I already know what I think. And I don't want to pollute their creative impulses by asking for a result. But there's a give and take that takes place over a certain amount of time. I'll often go to somebody's house or something, or sit with them privately and go through every single line in the movie. And they're so perceptive about transitions that don't work or questions that they might have in terms of relationships with their other characters. And they always make the script better, first of all. So we get that out of the way. And then I always ask them to come with the text wrote, which means you know it like you know Happy Birthday. There is no question about the text. So I can ask them to do jumping jacks or stand on their heads if I want to, and they're not thinking about the lines, because it's very difficult to do three things at once when you're thinking about not only the lines, but what the lines mean. And I really don't care what the lines mean in the end. Because right now, as I'm talking to you, I have an intention, and my intention is to convince or explain or something. It's a verb, generally, So, but if I were reading this off a piece of paper or trying to remember these words, it's very difficult for me to convince you and brush my teeth and or whatever at the same time. So the first thing I do is I try to give them permission to throw away the language. Know it, but don't commit to the meaning of the words, because the words are, in the end, meaningless. What is important is intent, and that is the thing that they bring, and the moment-to-moment work. And so if they'll trust me on the language and they're not calling for lines, I mean, it happens, especially, with long monologues and so forth. That kind of thing can happen. But really what you want to do, especially with young actors, is get that off the table. Because if you can get that off the table, they're much more able to be in the moment. Ed was, fascinating. It was I like to say, a master's class in acting, being, inches away from him, watching him work. Because whatever was going on with him, he's got seven gears, people like him, where he can do seven things at once. And he would get frustrated about something, and he'd say, what's the line again? What's the line again? And he'd be right in that moment, and then he'd just deliver the line, and you wouldn't even realize that he'd begun. Because he would take that real energy and frustration and put it right into it. And you know what? It's real, because what's really going on with him in that moment is he's frustrated because he dropped that line, and bang, he puts it right in, and it's absolutely authentic. So, if I can create the conditions and have a leader like an actor like Ed or actually a lot of these people that I've worked with, John and Jim, especially Jim and David Duchovny, for instance, who work in television, who are used to working fast. They will sort of set the tone for everybody else who might be, used to working a little bit slower. But again, I'm talking about, you know, drama as opposed to maybe action, or, you know, there are all sorts of different levels to in terms of films and movies and so forth. So I'm really talking about, you know, when you're really trying to get the drama to crackle, there are certain things that I feel like I can share with the actor to help them be their best. And be there to whisper in their ear if I see something, if I see an opportunity, or say, hey, you know what, when you do this, you know, poke them with a pencil, see what happens, or, you know, whatever it is, like to get something real happening. It's always about that, trying to find a truth. And, you know, sometimes they find it themselves, you know, like, you know, you'll find a little rivalry that's going on between two people, and you can sort of incite it a little bit. And the next thing you know, it's happening in the scene. It's happening through the text. So, but these are things that you can't plan for. You know, it's more like it's something that you hope for. And so, because they'll always make me better than I am. There's just no question. If I can give them the environment and the conditions in which to do it, they'll be great. And so that's what I strive to do.
Wow, this is very cool. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask, how much, I think one of the difficulties that some actors face, and I want to ask you about working with, you know, name talent versus otherwise, how much as a director validation do you give, because, one, it's important, but two, because it's deserved. Because I see a lot of younger directors who they're more concerned with the shots, or they're more concerned with the setup, and then the people act, they go, okay, let's move on. And they don't take a moment to let their talent know whether they've done a nice job or a not so nice job. I mean, moving on, I guess, should say, great, you've done enough, but it's like, you know, I think of it like having a child, and they've done something, and you go, okay, as opposed to saying thank you or nice job. How do you relate to the actors regarding, you know, validating?
I think it depends on who they are, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, John wanted that validation. He needed to know that he was pleasing you and giving you what you wanted. He wanted that. He wanted to hear that. And I didn't mind giving it, you know. But again, it's a very... It can be a little bit of a slippery thing, because, you know, there's a difference between wanting approval and, you know, actually wanting criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they are they're the same, and sometimes they're mutually exclusive. And if you give criticism when somebody really just wants reassurance, you can kind of create a problem. So you have to, be able to sort the two things out, I think, and try to see what they're really asking for. But listen, you know, I don't BS people. But I also would never, again, I have too much respect for the people that I hire. And by the way, you know, the people who aren't big stars either. I mean, you know, you're hiring people who are really great at what they do, and you have to respect what they're putting themselves through. And, you know, I mean, look, it's an actor. You make them, their call is at 10 in the morning, and you don't get to them until 4. They're probably sitting in their trailer, like, irritated. You know, I mean, that has nothing to do with them. So how do you get them out and still get good work out of them and get them to... to leave that aside, or to incorporate it into the work, you know, what do you do? These are all the things that you're confronted with as a filmmaker. And so I guess the answer is, you know, I try to give them whatever I think that they need, and not give them more than they need, because, you know, I don't want them to feel like they're being shined on, because if they lose confidence in your opinion, you know, are you really giving me what you want? Am I really giving it to you? Because maybe I am, maybe I'm not. And if I'm not, please tell me. And it's easy to get, you know, swept up in the glow of, you know, the star in front of you, and not ask for what you really need. And so that's another thing that you got to sort of work with a little bit, especially as a younger filmmaker.
Oh, that's very cool. You know, we are just at that point where we're out of time, but I've got a comment from a guest in the chat room who I want to mention. You know her, and it's Pamela Wistrom.
Hey, Pam.
She says, great show this morning on filmmaking and Phantom. Todd had a wonderful time with you and everyone on the film. Love the balanced approach you use in filmmaking. Very cool. So she's been listening in and been in the chat for a few moments now. I mean, so awesome.
Great. Always a pleasure, Rex.
Well, it is always a pleasure talking with you, and I hope we will do it again soon. We'll let listeners know when we come back and talk. And again, congratulations on, one, the theatrical release of Phantom, and, two, on the upcoming date, the June 25th, of the release of the DVD, the Blu-ray, and the video on demand, as well as then the upcoming Netflix release and the subsequent television run. So that's all very, very cool. It must feel, I would imagine, rewarding for that. And I wanted to say that the website, again, is phantomthefilm.com and solarfilmworks.com and, of course, Solar Filmworks on Facebook. So, Todd, thank you very much. I'm going to talk to you in just a couple moments and remind the listeners that you'll be back. And thank you so much for being here today.
Talk to you soon. Thanks,
all
Rick.
Right, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, Mr. Todd Robinson, absolutely fascinating discussion, a wealth of information. I hope you share this with all of your filmmaking industry colleagues and friends, and help us spread it near and far through Twitter and Facebook and Google+ and your favorite social media means. I hope you leave comments at the player right now before you go away if you're listening live or archived. Thanks for joining us in chat room if you've been live, and thanks for listening. Thanks for all the support and everything that you do. I really do appreciate you, listeners and readers of Rex Sykes Movie Beat, for spreading the word on my guests and helping others benefit from the expertise that's shared. Again, Todd Robinson, I want to thank you very much, and thanks to all of you. A reminder that tomorrow there was to be a show with Julian Adams. I have had to postpone it due to my own an emergency, a fire I need to put out outside of where I'm at, and so I have to postpone the show. We will have Julian back very soon. And Pendentium comes up on Thursday, Amy Jo Berman on Friday, and then the rest of the other guests. So please keep tweeting about it and sharing it with everyone. Find out who my guests are on Facebook, Rex Sykes Movie Beat Friends on Facebook. Come and join us there. Go ahead and like the page. My own website, RexSykesMovieBeat.com, is up. But it's also under construction. The new site has not been launched yet, and so the interviews are always available at the RexSykes.com site, but articles and blogs and videos and everything else that go with the site are not being updated, and that's just so you know. But you can look and see who guests are, but for the schedule, go to RexSykesMovieBeatFriends and or follow on Twitter. RexSykesMovieBT is the way the last word is abbreviated. RexSykesMovieBT is the abbreviation. And check out Rex Sykes Movie Beat on YouTube as well. So, a reminder, phantomthefilm.com and solarfilmworks.com, and get Phantom the movie coming June 25th from Todd Robinson, Julian Adams, Pendentium, and others. And Pam Wistrom is here, an actress in the movie as well. She's been in the chat. So, awesome, everybody. Thank you so much. And as we always say, everybody have a fabulous day. Make your movies, complete your projects, and until we meet the next time, that is a wrap.